All right, what's our topic this fall? The Gospels. Okay, hey, just one quick personal note on the, I know floods are relatively rare around here, but where I come from, it's almost an annual event, and depending on, you know, an 8-inch rainfall in a certain basin is not all that unusual over a 24-hour period, and then it creates these flooding things. We actually live, we had a building, we were flooded 4 different times, from 1 inch to 4 feet, and it really is a blessing when somebody cares about that, because it's just a horrible thing. We actually had a fish underneath our stage at one point. It was pretty crazy. We finally got it to higher ground, which maybe wisdom would have said we should have done that sooner, but things push you that way. All right, we're talking about the Gospels, and before we go into the Gospels, can you put it down here as well, Aiden, what you're going to show? Chris, this is going to be a big piece of it, so I want to review a little bit of what Chris was talking about, trying to put the context, because the Gospel is, it's a description of 4 books, the Gospels. It has a very distinct meaning. Those 4 narratives, 3 of which are the linear story, and we call that synopsis. There's a history that goes on, and then John, which is much more free-flowing. Okay? And so there's a definition of the word gospel that means, in our world, in church history, it means those 4 books. So reading from the Gospels means you're reading out of those 4 books. But there's also meanings that it's a modifier, or it needs modifying, to fully understand what it's talking about. And so the gospel, as a word, has multiple meanings, but it also has multiple implications in those meanings, okay? So when you're reading through the scripture, you don't see a lot about the gospel of God, but that would be this idea that it's the whole story of God. It's the gospel of God is all that we know about his story and all those pieces that we don't know. What was going on before, what will go after. He closes the history of what we are going to be as a planet and as a people and the recreation of the heavens and the earth. We don't know what happens after that. There's not a lot of description. It's going to be cool, but we don't know what it's going to look like. Okay, so that's the whole story. We don't know everything. We don't know everything about this age, but we know less about those pieces of what God is doing and how he came to come up with his plan. That's the gospel of God. The gospel of the kingdom is that's a much more common idea. It's not always used in those words, but when it's talking about the gospel, and I think this is what Chris was really alluding to in his word there. These just give me a little bit of a framework. We want to immerse this. Keep reminding ourselves that when you see the word gospel, you have to stop and ask, well, which gospel is this talking about? Okay, and a lot of what Chris was talking about is this whole advancement of the kingdom around the world. The story of his ultimate reign in hearts and lives, which is different than the gospel, the good news of the old covenant, if you wanted to apply that term, which where God was going to dwell with the people, he would bless them, they would follow him. And so that covenant was a gospel of sorts. It was a story he was writing. He was trying to display something. And the way that walked out was he would bless them, they would reign, and he would prosper that nation. Well, the gospel of the kingdom of Jesus is very different, and it gets kind of confusing. We're going to look at another slide of why it would be confusing when they're trying to transition, because the other thing that's true of the narratives is they're transitionary, okay? They're not quite the church age. They're not quite, we're kind of doing this changeover of covenants here. And you have to stop when you're reading and think, okay, what is he talking to? Is he talking to the Jews? Is he talking to the Greeks? Is he talking about what's going to be in the church age? Is he talking about what's right now in his present day time? You have to bring a little discernment. Not all verses or commands or stories we apply the same way. And so this little background of what is he talking about when he talks about, and somebody says, and the gospel, most often he would be talking about this kingdom reign, this kingdom idea. This bigger story inside the story of God that has to do with our relationship with Jesus, what he's doing on the planet now, what his intentions are, and it's no longer a geopolitical reign. It is a kingdom that reigns in communities. And every one of us at some point, and I don't know what your family heritage is, but a whole bunch of us are first generation Christians who have a unique expression. We've come together to practice worship, to practice displaying God's kingdom to our little world. the places we have influence. And it's a unique expression. There is no other family of faith exactly like this one, where our gifts, our talents, our ambitions, the way we see things, the way God made us, the way we interact, the children we're going to bear and raise up, it's a unique expression, and God loves it. When he sees different expressions, all being true to the scripture, all following him, all living out this gospel of the kingdom, that Jesus is reigning in our hearts and lives. And it really shapes us. This gospel goes all the way through his ultimate reign. This gospel of the kingdom goes all the way through when he comes back, what is referred to as the thousand-year reign, the millennium reign, and the recreation of the heavens and the earth, where he's established physically back on the planet, managing things as a benevolent dictator, living out life together with those who have decided to be a part of his kingdom. And all those who don't want to be a part of the kingdom, they're no longer around. They're taken away. And so the gospel of the kingdom is not just now, but it's this future tense when he comes back, and all those promises about David's promise that there would be a throne that reigns forever fits in that. Okay, that's all the gospel of the kingdom. There's also the gospel of salvation, the story of salvation, the story of redemption. And oftentimes we reduce down the word. If we share the gospel with someone, that's usually what we're talking about. But it's really the way of salvation. It's the good news of redemption when we use it in that context. And it's only one very limited piece of the story of God. Okay? Why this is all important is because how we're moving towards this greater understanding of being able to relate the gospel of salvation to those who are not near to Jesus right now. We're trying to create an opportunity for them to contextualize it. And in our culture, it becomes much more important that we see, that they begin to see the whole story of God. If you're sharing with someone from another country that doesn't have a biblical worldview as its heritage, is kind of a basic bias, which is more and more our culture now, the whole story becomes much more important, and to become familiar with it. And what's Jesus really calling us to? There's many people who don't have an intention to do good or to be moral or a lot of those things. So just calling them to find salvation is a big step from their worldview. And so if we can contextualize it, but it is the first step. The way of salvation is a first step where someone actually gains access into the kingdom and then that greater story of God. Okay, so if you can think about it that way, it may help you when you're reading. Again, the goal here is to be reading through the Gospels, in that definition, the narratives, over and over and over again. We presented a couple reading plans, a couple resources. You don't have to follow those exactly, but somehow be immersed in getting our head around this person, Jesus. All right, as we step into the Gospels, and this is all leading up to a very transitionary chapter we're going to look at today, because it tees up our place in the kingdom, how we are supposed to live in this kingdom story. If you've never placed your faith in Jesus Christ, it may be the gospel of salvation is the most important information for you. But to see how it fits in this grand plan is pretty important too. So from here on, we're going to make that assumption, if that's not true of you, that you've already received and believed the gospel of salvation. But if that's not true, please talk to someone. And if it is true, that's kind of the premise we're going to walk from today. So now what? They decide to believe that Jesus is the Messiah. Okay, what's the next slide there, Mr. Aiden? Here's the confusing piece, and Chris showed this again, and we just want to keep reinforcing this. If you were in the Old Covenant, the age of the promise, the gospel of Abraham, the gospel of Moses, and the gospel of David, the Davidic covenants, they were looking forward to the fulfillment of these promises. Some of these promises were they were contingent on behavior, and some of them were just universal. God said, I'm going to do this. I don't care what you do, I'm going to do this. The Mosaic Covenant was far more of a contingent. It's contingent on their practice, how he was going to establish those things. But if you were back there in that age and you're looking forward, and you've probably heard of this or seen this, if you're a long ways away looking at the mountains, you have no idea all the pieces in between. And what their expectation, so when you're reading the gospel narratives, and you hear people struggling about, well, Jesus from Bethlehem. or I'm sorry, the Messiah was supposed to come from Bethlehem, and he's from Nazareth. Well, it's all because they had this very clear picture of exactly what the Messiah was going to have. And when David took over, he kicked butt. He just took over. The throne is here. And the enemies, when they took the promised land, as long as they were walking it out as God wanted, they just were victorious. And please remember, in this time when Jesus was talking, they were back in, they were an oppressed place. They were being ruled from outside. This idea of a geopolitical place where God was going to establish them as a nation again with a forever king whose reign would never end. That's what they were hoping in. That was the promise. And everybody in that age, if you were Jewish and active, you got that. There was a spirit. The Simeons and all those, they knew this was the time. They knew Daniel. They knew this is the time. Something's about to happen. There's all kinds of false messiahs popping up all over the place. When you read extra biblical history, Jesus was not unique as a messiah figure because the evil one was already trying to devalue that. Okay? So that's you're heading into this. And the Messiah comes. We start saying, I'm the Messiah. And okay, and I was reading this week, and one of them was they tried to take him by force and plant him on the throne, and Jesus escaped. They had a clear picture of what that was going to be and the implications of it. It was a geopolitical, real kingdom, and then the kingdom reign of Messiah forever. That was to be the perspective. That's all they could see. All right, you can go to the next one, please, Mr. Hayden. The reality is there was a promised Messiah. Jesus came first, and he began his kingdom work. And he's advancing it little by little through hearts and minds. The gospel of the kingdom is the ultimate reign of Jesus in our hearts and lives. And as that's established, as little territories are taken and little communities out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, every ethne, every unique group of people, there's going to be a representative in this kingdom. And that's not a individual. It would be a body, a family of faith that says we believe together and we are going to be light bearers. And that's what he's building right now. And so this idea of it's already, but it's not yet. It's started, but it's not complete. When he comes back the second time, and so we're in this box in the middle of the church age where he's building his kingdom, but it's not by force. He doesn't have an active reign. The question he asks each of us is, do I have an active reign in you? Because if he's not king there, the church age gets longer. I mean, I don't know how all the sovereignty of God and the time frame and all those kind of things, but there are causes and effects. And when every tribe and tongue and every nation is reached, that doesn't mean they've heard, but that there's a gospel witness. There's people who believe and are walking as with like Jesus is king in that place. Then the end can come, the second coming, and he'll come back and make all things right, and he will literally rule on the earth. But if you're standing back in the Old Testament, looking forward to Messiah, be very easy to miss that. So keep that in mind in his conversations with people, what their expectation was. Okay? That helps you understand it. And when he's talking about the kingdom, he's talking about this whole process of him reigning in our lives. The kingdom is a kingdom of the heart. What are our affections? What do we care about? Okay? So that's the little, and we'll keep kind of reinforcing that. We'll keep getting them shorter and shorter, but this is important to understand when you're trying to understand the narratives. Okay, next slide. So if I had a laser pointer, my batteries are dead and we can't find the other one. There's a transition in Jesus' ministry. How many were here when Chris showed the video with the guy walking around Bethsaida? How many actually saw that video? There's a number that have not. If you can find a link for that, it sets some things up pretty well. It's worth, I think it's maybe 30 minutes, 28 minutes, something like that. It's worth a little time after dinner to review that a few times because he's got some good thoughts. It reinforces some things. It maybe wouldn't be exactly the way we would phrase things, and but he really has some really good understanding about community and the centrality of being with Jesus and becoming like Jesus. He really has some good ideas there. And it gives you this map. And here's what you need to understand. Can you go back and forth between two? Can you go to the next one? Okay, I know this is blurry. But as you move left to right, that's the 3-year ministry of Jesus, okay? And when you start out, you can see the birth. You can see the yellow dots on the bottom are first, second, third, fourth Passovers that walk through there. You can see these big areas of obscurity and popularity and opposition. Okay? You see all that? So the beginning of his ministry, if right above the big blue line, you can see early Judean, Galilean, Middle Galilean, and late Judean. So he had this moment, he had this season when he was in the Jerusalem area. And then he went back north, and he spent most of his time. And so when you hear about a boat or a lake or a storm, there's a place. There's a geographic place you can get your head around. And they went back and forth across the sea. I'm assuming it's just a lot easier by boat than walking around the edge of the lake. But it helps get it real, and you see those transitions. And where was he? And he heals the demoniac, and then he comes back to that same city, and everybody's curious about him. Well, the demoniac did his job. He wanted to come with him, remember? And Jesus said, no, you go tell everybody. The next time Jesus came to that area, everybody's going, tell us about it. Oh, we saw an amazing thing. And so that's how this kingdom started to reign in that city. Okay? So can we go back? So you see how that all lays out? There's transitions that are happening. So his early part of his ministry, you see the big words Galilee, Decapolis, Samaria, Perea, Judea. Down, see how those all flow? Those are territories. Those are regions. Okay, so those blocks of early Judean, then Galilean, and then back to Judea. Well, Jerusalem is down in Judea. Bethlehem is down in Judea. Okay, that's his later years. A big chunk of his teaching, a big chunk of his miracles were in his Galilean ministry, okay? And that's not a very big area. If you were to walk, I didn't get out my scale exactly, but it's probably maybe 40 miles, 50 miles max between the north edge of the Sea of Galilee and Jerusalem. So from here to Denver, all of Jesus' ministry, all filled up with villages with no distractions, no internet, no TV. If there was something happening, people would have known. And so now if you draw a circle around Loveland and Windsor and maybe South Fort Collins, not much, you know, all the way down to Berthoud, something like that. Again, we don't have a basic number. Most of his teaching and miracles occurred in a region not much bigger than that, with the big Sea of Galilee right in the middle of it. And that's where it's going back and forth. So he's up on the north, and he's heading south. Okay. He's telling what the kingdom is in the early, when you walk through the synoptics, he's telling about the kingdom. He's just announcing himself as the Messiah. He's demonstrating that with works of power and healing, demonstrating he's the guy. And then there's a transition that occurs or begins to occur. In the latter chapters, a lot of the narratives, you'll find a lot more parables. There's something transitioning. Did you catch? Can we go back to that other slide? Okay, obscurity. Nobody knew who he was. He becomes popular when he's doing all these miracles. And then they start to turn on him again. He becomes starting to become opposed. He becomes a little more directive, a little more clear as he starts announcing, I'm the guy, and people start freaking out. Well, you're not the guy, you're not even from Bethlehem. Little did they know. Can anything good come from up north or out west? Those biases were there. And so you see this transition. And we start, what we're going to look at in Luke 10 is somewhere, even the locations of these cities are not exact. There's assumptions being made, okay? Nobody knows for sure. There's no marker on the stone. This is the city of Bethsaida. It's just a general description where we get a pretty good idea of where things are. And the timeline is not exact. The Passovers mark things. Those are rigid. We can figure things out from that in relationship to when the Passovers hit in the Jewish calendar. But we're getting close to the middle the end of his popularity. He's moving into this opposed place. And what he's beginning to do in Luke 10, he's beginning to say, okay, here's what you're going to do. This is how the kingdom, the gospel of the kingdom plays out next step. This is what's important. This is how I want you to conduct yourselves. This is a place where he's transitioning from teaching them about the kingdom to starting to hand them the kingdom, okay? And so if we're kingdom workers, if we're members of the kingdom, I'm ready. That's the way our ears should be. Give me the kingdom. Okay, what do I need to know? Because I really want that end thing where the kingdom reigns forever and you dry my tears and the pain goes away. I really want that. So I want to know what my part is and I'm going to walk in it. I believe the gospel of salvation and gratefulness and celebration and joy and unbelievable grace of all of that flowing into my life. I want to be a gospel worker. I want to be a kingdom member. And so he's starting to hand that to them. And then the end of it is the passion and so on up there. Okay, what's the next? Yeah, you can just black it out there for a minute, bud. Okay, so Luke 10, he's starting to hand them the kingdom. There's a number of people at this stage in Luke 9 where he's talking to people who say, hey, I want to go. I want to be a part of this. And he talks to them about counting the cost. He talks to them. He says, okay, you can come. And then and those passages go, let me first do this. Let me first do that. And people are setting up their reasons why they won't walk in this kingdom work. And he begins to say, okay, this is what it looks like. And his big response in Luke 10 to start it off. Please keep in mind, there was a close-knit, very close three. There's a very close 12. Then there was a number that were pretty tight with him. They were kind of following him around on the edges. They're not apostles, but they were disciples. They were following him. And then there was this whole crowd. And so oftentimes the crowd would disappear because he'd say something too hard and they'd leave. Okay? So there's more than just the 12. He didn't just go randomly go, oh, I'm going to go through town and appoint somebody. There's people that have been listening to what the kingdom is like and watching all these miracles and believing in him conceptually that he was the Messiah. And he starts to hand them the keys. And after this, in Luke 10:1, and we're gonna study this a little bit. I'm going to give you guys a chance to interact on a few questions here in a few minutes, because this is important for us to understand our biases and what it really looked like when Jesus handed them the pattern of kingdom expansion. What is it going to look like when we take the gospel of salvation and advance it in this kingdom work? Okay? Luke 10, verse 1. After this, the Lord had appointed 72 others and sent them on ahead of him, two by two, into every town and place where he himself was about to go. Here's what's happening. He's starting his transition from that northern ministry. They're going to start working their way down to Jerusalem now. Okay? So there's a geographic thing that they're going to start taking new ground. People had probably heard of him, but they had not been immersed in the whole ministry nearly as much as up in the Galilean ministry. Okay, so that's what's happening here, is he's going to start releasing them to start moving south and start taking kingdom ground. Let them practice, not where he'd already been, in any great measure, and start walking this out. What's it going to look like? Because this pattern is going to be the same pattern that they use as going to India and Europe and the rest of the Middle East. And it's the same pattern that the apostles took, and they started moving forward the kingdom. So this is kind of the first little baby step. All right, try this. And he's handing it to them. Two by two into every town and place where he himself was about to go. Okay, he's moving south towards Jerusalem, towards that last phase of his ministry. And he said to them, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest. So we have this agrarian, agricultural picture. Say, look, there's lots and lots of people who will respond to the gospel of salvation. Okay? There's lots of people out there that if we can help them understand how to be redeemed back to God, they will receive it. The problem is not people being willing, it is those who are willing to go and to speak and to communicate it. That's the problem. Here's your first action step. Pull out your phones. If we want to be trained, one of our goals is to be trained. Please pull out your phone if you have not already done this. And in your alarm system, and if you don't know how to do that, talk to somebody under 30 and they will set it up. A repeating alarm at 10:02 a.m. every day. You don't have your phones out. If we're not going to apply this, I'm going to quit talking. Okay? We're going to, as a church, take seriously. This is a command, by the way. This is not a good idea. This is not a suggestion. This is a command. Beseech the Lord of the harvest, which is way different than, well, if you get around to it, ask him. You know, you may want to think about it if he wants to. There's a command, 10:02 every day. Prayer. And every day at 10:02, you can know that your brothers and sisters are lifting up those prayers along with you. If I'm with a believer, whatever we're doing, we stop and just pray for a couple minutes. It doesn't have to be a 20-minute prayer. Say, Lord, I want to be serious about this. I want to be believing that you want to create laborers. Please keep in mind, it's very key. Laborers at this point were not people who were already believers that just hadn't gotten very serious about following Jesus yet. They were completely oblivious to the gospel at this point. So we have to believe that there are laborers out there that want to follow and believe in Jesus and become a part of the gospel of the kingdom. And when that alarm goes off, even if it's a 10-second prayer, it will help us be serious about understanding. There's a strategy of asking God, cooperating with God in his kingdom work to bring laborers out of this world that will keep going. And that's a really important prayer, because our strategy depends on people quickly becoming laborers. Please keep in mind, these guys, they didn't go to seminary. They weren't super well trained. They just hung out with Jesus, and a whole bunch of them didn't even get that much time. They understood and said, this is my job. I want to be a part of this. So it would be like World War II, Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor. People could just go, I'm in. The lines were just unbelievable. As people said, there's something I want to participate in. I'm not trained yet. I'm not skilled yet. But my heart is in. And we need to ask God for those kind of hearts, because none of us are completely trained or all that effective without him doing that. Every day. You can put it any way you want. Laborers. But just an alarm. Set it every day. And you'll know that at least a few of us will be praying together every day when that goes off. And if it's on buzz, you don't even have to. You can have it in your pocket. You put it on a calendar. If you have another alarm system that you use, please use it. But please apply that. It's critical to us having the mentality of bringing forth and believing God, begging God for laborers. The problem is not people who will believe. The problem, according to Jesus, is there's no one willing to communicate this message. Okay? We don't want to be the limiting factor. And there's certainly lots and lots of people around the world who have never had a chance. There's lots of people in Loveland. And there's people groups. The people who look just like you and work the same place as you do, probably most of them have had ample opportunity to hear the gospel. There's a whole bunch of people. And it's one of the reasons we're so excited about working with Dennis. You happen to be sitting here today with the Lakota people. They've not had an opportunity to hear much of a clear understanding of who Jesus is and what it means to follow him. Somebody's alarm? That's a good alarm. Excellent. Perfect. I'm going to look for that shofar or whatever it is alarm to go off on mine that calls me to prayer. But thank you for doing that. Let's commit to that. If you're with each other, don't be weird. Hey, we need to pray for laborers. And it can be a two-sentence prayer. It can be two words. But keep that focus on us, okay? So pray is the big objective there. And then go is the first word of the next verse. Go your way. Be going. Be out there. Not coming, going. Not sitting still, going. Looking for, listening for, taking risks to find people who will respond. Behold, I am sending you out as lambs in the midst of wolves. Sounds a little dangerous. Sounds a little risky. Sounds a little uncomfortable. Okay, he's teeing up everything it's going to be like in our age to move the kingdom forward to the ends of the earth, till every tribe and tongue and people and nation. It's just loaded. This is a pivotal chapter because of it's how he's handing them the keys to the kingdom. He's handing them the mission and the pattern. Carry no money bag, no knapsack, no sandals, and greet no one on the road. Now there's some really, you're going to get a chance to process this a little bit with one with another. What's unique about that? What's the point? What would happen if we didn't do this or that? Verse 5, whatever house you enter first, say, peace be to this house. And if a son of peace is there, your peace will rest upon him. But if not, it will return to you. We're on the hunt for people who receive the message. It says something about when and how we communicate our mission and what we're about and who we're following and who we're serving. There's something bold here that we need to pull out of this. And there's some comparison contrast things on the little questions I want you guys to process here in a couple minutes. All right? Remain in the same house, eating and drinking what they provide, for the laborer deserves his wages. Do not go from house to house. Whenever you enter a town and they receive you, eat what is set before you. Heal the sick in it and say to them, the kingdom of God has come near to you. And whenever you enter a town and they do not receive you, go into its streets and say, even the dust of your town that clings to our feet, we wipe off against you. Nevertheless, know this, that the kingdom of God has come near. The kingdom of God has been here today, and you missed it. Okay? There's a fundamental attitude in those few verses. And then he has an incredible warning. And by the way, those towns were all on that map, right up in the region where they'd seen amazing miracles. What are we going to see here? How does this compare to the way we think about the gospel? So Aiden, can you throw up that list of questions? And we're going to try to save just a couple minutes. We'll give you about 7 minutes, and then we'll give a little feedback to talk about this. What does this teach us about the strategy for communicating the gospel of Jesus today? How can we map it over? What things apply? What things don't? I'm going to cheat just a little bit here. Okay, I'm going to give you one. So, heal the sick in it and say to them, you know, do good. I don't have the ability to heal the sick, but when I'm in an environment where they have not known Jesus, I'm way more bold asking him, Jesus, you got to let them know you're real. I can't do that. I can do certain things, but I can't let you know you're real. And those who are working in people groups, and some of those are in Loveland, please don't envision a little village somewhere in the middle of the Middle East where the kingdom, the gospel, the person of Jesus, it's really absent. God is not opposed or above doing something really wild to get their attention. And when you read about those places where the gospel enters in, that's often one of the first steps. I never limit. I just don't think it's normative that we go around seeing people physically healed. But if that's what it takes in that place, do not be afraid to ask God, are you going to be embarrassed? Because I just say, you know what? I don't know what God's going to do, but it's his reputation. If he's got to work here, great. Go for it. I believe you can and will do that. And I can bring faith to that. But regardless of whether we heal, we can do the same things of bringing a blessing. Listening to give. Being in the moment. Dreaming about cool ways of handing out things or serving or creating concerts or coming alongside or just stopping and saying, I really appreciate what you're doing. Having that heart to bring good into those people. The man of peace concept is a big deal, and we're not going to look a lot at that today, but you're going to keep hearing it, man or woman. It's not intended to be gender specific, but males were typically the heads of household, and so that's an appropriate thing. If you get a guy in his household that will receive you, it's a big deal. All right, so you see those questions? Everybody familiar with the friendship evangelism model and some of its kind of tenets and the church growth model? Church growth is everybody come here and see me, bring everybody here. We'll just dazzle them with really cool stuff, and hopefully eventually they'll hear the gospel. The friendship model is just go and be friends with people, and in the appropriate time, you might tell them you're a Christian. But you don't do that very fast, and you spend lots and lots of time building relationship before you communicate the gospel, and hopefully you get an opportunity. And then mass communication would just be, in this age, it would have been just, you know, standing in the street corner preaching. Here it might be television kind of things or Billy Graham crusades or big lit drops or, you know, billboard advertising, communicating. So that would be kind of the idea of mass communication. So when you look at this pattern that he gives us, how is it different? So with twos or threes, I want you to all get a chance to process this. Think about this passage, Luke 10, and you can start in verse 3, because we already covered the application for 1 and 2, okay? So I'll give you a few minutes, and then we'll hear some things about that, okay? All right, so I know we didn't get a lot of time, and we'll keep coming back to this. We're going to keep reinforcing this idea out of Luke 10, because it is our transition into what does it mean if we're going to own the kingdom? How are we going to conduct ourselves? So any overall observations, things, as you read it with that in mind, any kind of just big ideas that pop up in your mind or heart? Not the specific questions, but just, oh, yeah, that's kind of different than I think about this. Yeah, Paul.
How do you prepare?
Okay, well, one of the big things in this is most of these towns and villages were under 200 or 300 people. So going is like two blocks for us. It's another circle. It's not a big deal. You know, I could probably think of at least 10 cultures really quickly in Loveland that don't have much of a gospel witness that's clear, that's proclaiming. There may be a Christian there, but they're not really intentional in this way. Okay? So I don't think it's any different. We'll keep unfolding the strategy as we go through this, but it is kind of a self-replicating thing based on the man of peace. Okay? Any other big observations?
It's different than anything else that's going on today.
In terms of the way churches or ministries operate?
Right.
Yep. I would agree. I think the well-publicized, the well-understood ones, I think this is going on in large measure around most of the world and in the U.S. in certain cultures, and it's explosive. It's explosive. Todd Watkins, he's walking this out in Austin, and there's some amazing things that he's seeing happen. Other observations, other high-level things.
So it's definitely relational.
Yep. Yep, it's not. There's not a lobbing the gospel message at people at distance. There's a face to face experience of that. The man of peace, looking for someone who's going to receive it, because they become, oftentimes, that person who owns the gospel, and they become the light bearer in their city. Like the demoniac, he owned whatever gospel he understood. He owned it. It wasn't something he took and hid under a basket. But he really owned it. So that man of peace is the one that God prepares. When I teach perspectives, one of the messages, they're bicultural bridges is the missional term. You're looking for a bridge into the community that lets you, because you're an outsider, you're looking for the person who will receive you and act as the source into that community. Other things? You ready for a nap? Looks like it.
It seems from, I don't know, for me, that there's a greater honesty to the Jesus' model. I don't know, I've always actually been uncomfortable with most all the other ones, because they all resemble this sort of overthought, bait and switch, sort of unnatural approach, in my view,
yep,
to the gospel, this sort of, if you wanted to start a bike club and go biking with guys, would you ever do any of that? Like, not tell them or bring them to a thing and say, oh, I wonder if they like biking because they saw Lance Armstrong. You just wouldn't, yep, do that. So, while we wouldn't do that in other contexts of our life, even in business relationships, it's very odd that, to me anyway, it's always seemed odd, that there's sort of this various models that are built around this sort of sales pitch, as it were, either from a large come and see venue sales,
yep,
pitch, or even a personal friendship sales pitch, because people could definitely take that as, oh, you're my friend because you have a religious agenda, as it were. I do, but it didn't need to smell like that, because if you're entering the world because you genuinely care about people in a,
right,
genuine way, that's a completely different thing. I don't think even the people that rejected Jesus walked away thinking, too often anyway, he doesn't believe what he's saying. I don't think they walked,
yep,
away with that. They may not like what he's saying.
And they certainly probably didn't have that slimy feeling of, why didn't you just tell me what he wanted?
Yeah, it didn't seem,
yeah,
like a,
yeah, absolutely. In fact, the one that pops into my head, and not all multi-level marketing is this way, so if you're involved with one, I have a bias about some of the patterns and things, and one of them is there is this kind of bait and switch. I've got this great thing, and then, oh, this is what it looks like. Bait and switch, I remember just thinking through church growth ideas, it's exactly what it is. Hey, just come, it's all about you, we're just going to love you, and I just kept saying, when do we tell them if they want to be a disciple, they have to die? Where do we put that in the service here? Where does that go? Now, they don't have to die necessarily to believe the gospel of salvation, but if they're going to really follow Jesus, it's not all about, we're just here to meet your needs. And that's there's a real honesty here. I think that's one of the key focuses, is we don't wait. The two things I'd like you to just think about, because it's key to our pattern that we're trying to establish. Number one is that we're not alone. I think it's critically important we understand he sent them out two by two. So much of what we do in latter ages Christianity is us as individuals trying to find a way on our own to present the gospel to people, the gospel of salvation. We're not supported. And then in that lack of support, lack of clarity, it just kind of gets fuzzy and messed up. The other one is early identification. This is who I am. It doesn't necessarily you sit down and ask every single person or hand them a tract, but this is who I am. I am a Jesus follower. I proclaim a king that I follow, and I'd love to introduce you to him at some point. I'd love for you to be exposed to him. But it's open and it's honest and it's real. They're not alone. And there's an early identification with Jesus. They speak it right out of the gate, okay? So we'll stop there. We'll continue on if you want to spend a little more time thinking through those questions, other observations, and your rest of your reading maybe a couple times this week. Get out Luke 10 and just kind of ask yourself some strategic questions. If you were starting a business and this was your business, the kingdom, that was a great picture. You don't, if you have an interest in something, you don't kind of walk around wondering, gee, I wonder if this guy likes bikes. You just go, I love bikes. You like bikes? Let's talk bikes. And then you find that common ground. You don't just wait. Okay. Does that make sense? So one of the things we're going to be doing through this whole fall is taking some time to talk about some of these things, let you guys process personally and share it back. I'll try to time it a little better. I just felt it was really important to get the clarity of why this chapter is so key. What's the transition there? As he's been teaching, now he's starting to hand it to us. And we have to be sitting there, just like we're one of the 70. How will we do this? Okay, you're sending us out. What do we do? And he has some really clear principles. Not all of them map over exactly, but the principles will hold true in our lives. So continue to think through that one. Let me pray. Father, I thank you. I thank you for the gospel that you are writing. I thank you. You are the central character. I thank you again. I just pray you would reinforce the idea that we do not have a mission. You have a mission, and we are your agents to complete your mission. It's not ours. It's not an add-on. It is central to our identity as kingdom workers. And I pray, God, every time those buzzers go off, you would enlarge our faith. That, God, you are serious about finding people who will walk with you and care about your kingdom. You will strongly support them. And I pray, God, you'd help us do that. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks for playing along.